Hello, family. This is Paula Massey with the Dynasty Radio 1382, the revolutionary radio for revolutionary people. You're listening to live radio talk show, the Education for the Miseducated System. And this is a live caller show. If you want to call and talk to me, you can call 646-716-7572. Press number one, and we will put you in queue. How are you doing this evening? I'm doing well. So I'm back here on the radio station, getting ready to talk to you about the things that I talked to you about, and that is homeschool. So I hope you all out there listening. I hope you all have a lot of questions that you need to ask me, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk today. So let me go ahead and start. You know, I haven't been here for a couple of weeks. I had to go out of town back to sunny Florida to take care of some family business, but I'm back. And, hey, parents, it's on us. It's on us what we're going to do as far as homeschooling our children, if that's what we're thinking about doing. So I'm here to talk to you about it. It's summertime. School is out in most places. I hope that you're getting ready to have a wonderful, wonderful summertime in my area. Yeah. Organization. We just started our summer school program on yesterday, and I'm happy to say where we've usually had about maybe 20, 21 children, now we have about 39 students that are on the show, on our summer school program. I'm here right now. If you have questions that you want to ask, ask me. Feel free to call in. Like I said, it is a live call show. So we're going to go ahead and get started. I hope you all can hear me out there. I know my music didn't start today, but that's okay. You know, we'll go ahead and do that. And if we want to get a little song in the meantime, when I have a little break, that'll be fine. You know, I love to hear my Curtis Mayfield song. That song gets me going every time, and also the libation. So, you know, if we get a little time in between, and I'll let Empress T know if it's okay, that's something we could do, we'll work on it. Okay, one thing I want to talk to you about is what I've noticed in my summer school program, and I'm not sure whether you have summer school in your program, in your area. And my organization, Women with Visions Unlimited, we summer school because we saw a need in our community because we had students that were being passed on and just being passed on to grade to grade to grade. And now they're in areas where they can't read. And now we have this Common Core thing going on. And I'm saying, like, okay, you want us to do critical thinking, but our children can't even critical read. So that's one of my issues there. You know, how can you expect a child to figure something out, explain it, write it down, and they haven't even learned the basics of phonics or can't even read yet? So basically, what I found in my summer school this time is that this is only the second day, and we have students that are wonderful, wonderful students who are in second grade that can do math like nobody's business. Right off the top of their head. But when it comes time to reading a math problem or just reading period, if you want to ask them a question in math or if it's a word problem, they say, can you read it to me? They can't read. I've had students like that in the past when I was running a private school. They were functional illiterate. So we're going to talk a little bit about functional illiterate. Those who can actually function in society without actually reading. But before we get into that and a few other things that I want to talk about, I think I'm going to go ahead and let her play that song right now. So, MPC, can you go ahead and play that for me? Just to get us moving.
Before we get things jumping off, invoking our ancestors in all the great loved ones we love. Fill up my cup, yeah. Gonna pour out some vigor and call on the great ones. for them to be with us. We got the spirit so high, it's a celebration.
Than the suffering best. Do not obey
keep moving on up, you know, to a better day. And that's what we're all about, moving to a better day with our babies and with our friends and family, you know, getting past where we are right now, getting past the place where we have been placed or we have been labeled to be. I want to share a little something with you because when I was just talking about that, it brought to mind, I work at a girls' group home in the evening time, and I have a young girl there, it's a couple of babies and moms. And I had to tell this little young black girl, beautiful little girl, a little baby, I had to tell her, I said, honey, you know, I'm so sick of you. And this is what I told her. I said, I'm so sick of you. Listen to me. I said, I'm tired of you repeating the labels that somebody has placed upon you. I have anger issues. I am paranoid, which feel like sometimes you feel like it gives them a reason to act out. Moms, grandmas, grandpas, whoever's listening to the show, auntie, uncle, let's be careful about how we label our children or how other people, we allow other people, meaning the school districts and the school system, to label our children, doctors to label our children, psychologists to label our children. They're our children, and we know what they need to be able to function in this life. So let's learn a little bit about our babies. Let's learn a little bit about how to work with them, and let's leave those labels aside because those labels do nothing but cripple them. Okay? Okay, before the song went on, thank you for playing that for me. We talked about we were talking about my summer school program, and I was using the word functional illiterate. Okay, I'll just share with you a little time when I was in a private school. I was running a private school. I had a young boy count money like nobody's business. Could do it, simple math. But when it came to reading a problem or reading a book or reading something, that at a very minimal, low. I mean, so low that it was not funny, that he had a way of manipulating you to read the question or manipulating you to answer the question for him. His mother was a teacher there, so it would be like, boy, you know what that answer is. That is not the answer. You know the answer is such and such and such. He'd go on his merry way with the answer, so we had to separate him put him in another teacher's class, and he was just lost because he could no longer go up to his mom and manipulate her to get the answer. So I look at, and maybe there's another definition, but I look at that as a person functional, as that they can operate. They can do whatever they need to do to get by in society. But when it comes to actually reading work and stuff like that, they have a very, very hard time doing that. In our little town, which is not too far from me, it's a place called Corcoran, California. And I don't know sure whether you've ever heard the story. This gentleman, now he goes all around the United States and different places with speaking engagements. He was a student in college. He had an injury. He was a football player. That's how he got to college. But he could not read. And how he got through college, a four-year college with a teaching credential, is that he was able to manipulate his friends to do some of his work. Okay, he injured his arm, and I believe that's what he injured his arm and couldn't write, so he had his girlfriend, can you write this for me, can you do this for me, to tell you what he wanted to write down, but he couldn't do it himself because he didn't know how to write and he didn't know how to read. It just so happens that when he finished college, he went to apply for a job, you know, probably did it online or whatever. I'm not sure how he got the job. But anyway, he got a letter from one of the schools. And this is what happened. It was Corcoran High School. And he got a letter, and he said, Dad, I got this letter, and look at this. It's the same last name as our last name. His dad said, yeah, what is that? He said, Dad, I don't know. His dad took the letter and opened up and read it to him, and he had been accepted as a teacher at a high school. So, wow, he took the job as a high school teacher. I don't know how this man did it. I really don't know how he did it. But he was able to teach his class what he needed to teach, whatever reading or writing. Okay? You tell me how he did it, but he did it. But he learned later on that that was not the way. So he became, he opened up and shared with the people that this was not right, that I don't know how to read. I'm teaching this class to these high school students. And I think he was challenged one day. That's probably what happened. I think he was probably was challenged when he had to come clean. But those are the people who can go through life, do whatever they need to do, make the money they need to do, have other people, other influences around them where they can influence other people to do things for them, but they can't do it themselves. But they're functioning in society, and if you were to look at them, you would never really know. But anyway, we have a young boy, a couple of young people at our school who are similar to that. Grade in math, but when it comes to reading, it's like, can you read that for me? And one of the children, their grandparents told me that they don't know what happened because when he was in an Afrocentric charter school up in San Francisco area, up in the Bay Area, fine. He was at his point, he was reading, he was doing everything he needed to do until he came, so they had to pull him out of there, move to another area, and put him in a public school. When they put him in the public school, his whole educational thing went down. He could still do his math. When it came to reading and stuff, he just lost it. He just lost all of that. So that's something that we're going to work with one-on-one and see what caused that. But I want to tell you a little bit about some of the facts about illiteracy in America. This is what they were saying, and this is something that I've always heard. It says nearly it says 58% of fourth graders, the 58% of the fourth graders in elementary school, they say that they read on a regular basis, and they love reading. But by the time they get to eighth grade, only 20% say they like to read, and they maybe read on a daily basis. Now, my question is, what happens between fourth grade and eighth grade? I'll tell you. When our students start going into junior high school or even into sixth grade, it becomes a challenge for them when they start going to junior high school. That is the time when they're really, really trying to find themselves. What group do they fit into? Do they fit anywhere at all? Who looks like me that I can hang around with? Who looks like me that don't want to hang around with me? What are those who don't look like me want to hang with me? And where are the bullies at so I can stay away from them? This is some of the things that are constantly on these children's mind because they're going through a transitional period. So what happens is, to me, when they get ready to go into these junior high school, public schools, it's like they no longer are focusing on their academics. They're focusing on who am I, where do I come from, what do I need to do, what do I need, who I need to be in order to get by and function in this high school. And I'm in junior high school. And I'm telling you, I am a product of that. Now, I read, I write, I can do all that stuff. I do math. But I tell you, I went to school in New York, and I tell you, when I left that my public elementary school and went into the public junior high school, it was in seventh and eighth grade. Academics was not my on my mind. It wasn't on my mind to figure out, I got to get these grades, I want to get A's, I want to get B's, I want to get my diploma so I could go on to high school. Because back in the day, we did a real graduation from eighth grade into ninth grade. And that wasn't on my mind. On my mind was the fact that who can I hang with? What group can I be with? How do I stop from being bullied and beat up on a regular basis? That was my focus. And can I hang with your group? Nope, I can't. Can I hang with your group? Nope. Can I beat up enough people to show that I can be one of your group? So it was like trying to figure out who I am. Afros were out then, but I had the TWA, the teeny weeny Afro, so I was called all kind of names. But that's my whole thing. In junior high school, you're trying to fit in. What can we do, parents to... and caregivers, what can we do to eliminate that stress from our children going into junior high school? Now, I know some of you out there will say, take them out of high school, take them out, homeschool them. But if they're already not fitting in there. What can we do to, what can we do for our children? And is taking them out of public school the answer, the true answer? Is that the true answer? Is that what we really need to do? So that's a question I'm throwing out there to you. Is it to homeschool our children? Is it to isolate them from those areas? And then when they get ready to go back, once you decide to put them back in high school, they've been so isolated from the youth that they don't really know how to fit back in. So my whole thing is that if you have a child and you see at a very, very young age, fit in even at their young age. I mean, I remember trying to fit in nursery school, okay? I remember way back then. Who can I hang with? If I can't hang with you, maybe I hang with the bad kids. They'll like me, and they won't lock me up in the shed like they do everybody else. So one way we could eliminate that thing is when we watch our children, we'd be involved in their education, we'd be involved in them, we talk to them, and we find out where they are, and we provide for them extra activities that they could be involved in with positive people. Now, sometimes when you homeschool your children, you have people that tell you that, oh, no, you cause them to be antisocial and you're not allowing them to socialize with other peers their age. But this is what I told people when I was homeschooling my children. You know what? My children are socializing. They're just socializing with who I want them to socialize with. Not everybody in that public school is who they need to be hanging with. I'll tell you that right now. Not everybody in the elementary school is a person they need to hang with. Now, I remember talking to you a few weeks ago about education, what the purpose of education is. And I still have that information here, and I'm going to read to you just that little portion there. Our public schools are there mainly to socialize. It's about socialization, about getting our children ready to go to where we think, society thinks they need to go to. So education, social integration, education in a broad sense, from infancy to adulthood, is thus a vital means of social control. Formal education in modern societies communicate ideas and values which play a part in regulating behavior. Okay? Think about it, regulating behavior. And I don't know what's happening with our children today, but I know that when I was going to school, they said stand in a straight line. We knew how to stand in a straight line. We knew how to sit in a class without holding conversation because the teacher was talking. I tell you what, I was doing a training a few weeks ago with about 10, maybe 12 high school students, and I kid you not, while you're talking, and if I have a guest speaker, they want to talk too. What is wrong with them? Our children are not learning those skills that, and I'm not saying that we have to socialize them or train them, but they do need to know how to listen, because I remember saying that you cannot listen to me while you're talking. When you're talking, your ears are shut down for what I'm saying. So in order to learn this, you need to be quiet, and I'm asking them to be quiet. But we have students that will sit there and just hold a conversation with other students. Now, when they're holding a conversation with other students, guess what they're doing? They're prohibiting that student from getting what they need to do. So from infancy to adulthood is a vital means of social control, part in regulating behavior. Some of the behavior needs to be regulated, okay? The new generations are instructed to observe the social norms, the violation of which may invite punishment. So what are the social norms? We have so many different social norms nowadays, it's not even funny. I remember not long ago when I was working, I'm going to refer to that because I work with teenagers and I work with teenage females who have babies. I was telling one of the staff members, one of the clients, I said, you cannot curse the staff member like you're doing. I'm like, that's why you don't have any points. That's why you're getting points taken from you. That's why you're getting written up. She said, who am I cursing? Who did I curse? And I said, well, you cursed this person. And, man, she tore up into a fury of curse words about that. And I said, see? She said, what? I said, and I thought right then, I said, oh, my God, she don't even know that she's using that language. The language, their norm is the language of the day. Our students don't know anything about how to speak. They feel like they have to use all these other words that don't make sense in order to get their point across. A lot of those who do that, they lack in education because they don't know the words that they need to use, so they use curse words in order to get their point across. So that's how they do. And I've had to tell my other staff members that, you know, you can fight that battle about curse words, but that's their language. And it's only because they don't know better. They don't even know that they're doing that. So basically our educational system is there to integrate, to do social integration. They impart values and also integrate people into the broader society. The curriculum of the school is its extracurricular activities and the informal relationship among students and teachers communicate certain values and social skills such as cooperation or team spirit, obedience, fair play. Now, they call that the curriculum of the school is extracurricular activity. So in sitting in a classroom with just children, there is extracurricular activity, and the teacher is there to impose character building traits. I was just thinking about this the other day, how when I was in school, there's certain things that we learn. And I wonder, is any children learning this? We learn the rules of the road. We learn not to walk in the middle of the road. We said cross at the green, not in between. Those are little things that we learn, okay? So we knew that when the light was green on our side, we could walk. We knew that we weren't supposed to walk in the middle of the road. There were certain things that we just actually learned from our teachers, and they instilled those little things in us. But I think that there's some things they instilled in us that I don't think that was proper because a lot of us became whitewashed without thinking, and we still are. And some of the things that they taught us was pretty good. So let's get back to literacy. So we know that the whole thing about educating our kids, children, it's about socialization. How do they fit in? Okay. One of the statistics that they have about literacy and illiteracy is that students who do not read proficiently by the third and fourth grade, the third grade are four times likelier to drop out of school, start a badass book club to keep your peers reading. This is what they said, to drop out of school. And they said, in order to keep your students to reading, start a club, start a reading club, banned books club. So one thing that you want to do is start something where your children can learn something. I know there's a local pastor in our community, and I need to get in touch with him. He's starting a chess club. And I remember watching the movie The Life of a King. That really brought tears to my eyes. But you had those students in that class cutting up the whole time. But when it came to learning something and being taught about what chess was all about, they became very, very interested in it. And one of the young men went all the way up to the championship, national championship. So it's something that our children can do. And when you study, when you're learning a task or you're learning about something that you're interested in, you're going to want to pick up a book and you want to read it, especially if you have books around the house, parents. If your child is into cars, subscribe to a magazine or go to the library and get books on cars. I bet you they'll start reading because that's something they're interested in. Little girl came to summer school today and she came with her little brother, her older brother, sister, parents brought her up, and she came yesterday. She had a handful of plastic dinosaurs, and today she had one dinosaur with her. And so I took the dinosaur. I said, "What is this called?" And I couldn't think of the name of it. But she's into dinosaurs. So how is her parents going to get her involved in the reading really soon? Go to the store, get books on dinosaurs. Go to the library and start reading them to her, having her hold her dinosaur, looking at the dinosaur, matching it with the picture that's in the book and calling out his name and say, can you say the name? And then start just talking to her about that dinosaur. What's how many legs that dinosaur, how many toes does the dinosaur have on each foot? Okay. Does the dinosaur, does it eat meat? Does it eat leaves? So those are the things that we could do with our children as far as getting them past that illiteracy mark at a young age. We don't want our children to be in third grade not reading at a first grade level. We want them to be able to read. Now, there are some first grade schools or schools that do teach children how to read in first grade. The schools my sons went to, they were reading when they left kindergarten. They were already reading, but we moved to a different area and they went into a school system where they were learning sight reading, not phonics. Phonics is the way to go, okay? Now, another statistic is that 85% of the juveniles who face trial in juvenile court systems are functionally illiterate, proving that there is a close relationship between illiteracy and crime, okay? There was a lady who came to my town one time and she was speaking and she was on welfare and she was out there doing whatever she needed to do to make her money. And she knew how to work the system. She was a prostitute, but she knew how to work the system. And she met a couple of people and they put her in their office and they began talking to her. I mean, she's a well-known author now. She writes books. She does speaking engagements. But they told her that if she could take that energy that she had out there in the streets to make it work for her, why couldn't she take that for something positive? And she listened to them, and they gave her a job in the office, and it was great. Okay. Let's see what's happening. I got a message that they couldn't hear. They couldn't hear me. Can you hear me now? Okay. So basically, she was able to get a job, and she was able to do what she needed to do because she took the energy that she had in the streets to be able to put it to something positive. So this is what they're saying here, that nearly 85%, that I know this for a fact, that nearly 85% of the juveniles who face trial in juvenile court systems are functionally illiterate. I was a principal of a private school, and we had a young man. He was in 10th grade. His mother brought him to the school, and with him, I'll just go back over that again. When I was working in another school as a principal, we had a young man who was in 10th grade. His mother enrolled him in our private school. But when I tested him, he was only at a third grade and below reading level and math level. Now, mind you, 10th grade, he was caught up in the juvenile system, going back and forth to court, being in the system, being locked up, and had one baby and another baby on the way. He knew how to get by with what he needed to do, but he was not ever able going to be able to unless somebody came along and really shook him and sat him down and taught him how to read, write, and do math, okay? He was going to be a functional illiterate. People like that who I see that were functional illiterates are those that are good with their hands, they're good artists, they could work on cars, they could do a lot of those things. But as far as reading, they can't do. So those people, they need to be able to have, once they get older, they need to have somebody come alongside them and teach them a skill. Maybe teach them a skill when they're young. I remember when I was in elementary school, we had a young man who got kicked out of elementary school. He never could go back to any school. So this young man would hang around where we lived and hang out with the drunks and the alcoholics and the winos, and they'd be working on their cars during the daytime or on the weekend. He gets right up in there with them. And they would say, go, get away, get out of here, get out of here. But he always came back. And now that young man, as we grew up, he could fix it. If you needed anything fixed, you say, go get him. He could fix it. Stop going to school when he was in elementary school. Parents didn't know what to do. All they know to do is say, oh, they kicked him out of school. He can't go back. And all we had was reform schools and public schools. We didn't have, like what we have now, community day schools. They didn't know that they could make money by keeping these kids in school and putting them in a special program back then. So I find that those students who are having a problem with their schools learning, they have some very, very special skills that we need to tap into. Parents, you need to tap into those skills. Okay. Let's see what we have. This is another one that they, another statistic. And I'm just reading these statistics. These were put out by some other people. It said teenage girls between the ages of 16 to 19 who live at or below the poverty line and have below average literacy skills are 6 times more likely to have children out of wedlock than girls their age who can read proficiently. Now, I'm going to tell you this. I do see that, but I also see a whole group of girls who can read at their level, who are proficient in reading and writing, who do have children out of wedlock. But I'll tell you what, once they have those children out of wedlock and they're still in high school or junior high school, I tell you what, their whole educational system goes down unless they have a family member or some group, village group to help them along. It doesn't have to happen. And I say that to say this, when we see young people, young girls walking around with babies and can't do what they need to do or function, they're on welfare, they're getting food stamps, they're getting infant supplements for their babies, they're on WIC, whatever they need to do, and that's just how their life. They're making their living. They're making their living. They're at home. They're watching TV. They're watching the soaps, and they're taking care of their baby, but they're not doing anything else. But I've also seen young people who continue on to school because they have that good support. I say that to say this, a lot of this is that we as a society, we need to pull together and develop those villages, develop those, implement those programs where we as people could come together and take care of our babies, take care of our children. I noticed that in other cultures, they don't throw their kids away, especially the Asian culture. When we first had the Hmong people coming to our area, I mean, very, very strict, with their children, but then they were getting in trouble because they were too strict with their children. We wanted to Americanize them and take that culture away from them, how they had a strong hold on their children. And then we started with these Asian gangs. Because the United States of America got involved in trying to teach them how to raise their children, and we don't even know how to raise our own. So I see other Asian families that they're very strong cultural, the Japanese, the Chinese, especially in my area, the Chinese group. You don't see their children out all times of night hanging out. These children, if you go to a Chinese restaurant, they're right there in the restaurant with their families. They may be sitting in the back doing their homework, and every now and then they'll pop up because their parents need somebody here to work the cash register. But on the side, they're doing their homework. I remember watching a documentary, and they tell their children, oh, this is what you're going to do. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You're going to do this. Oh, no, you're not going to be a dancer. Oh, no, you're not going to be a singer. Oh, no, you're not going to be whatever. But you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a lawyer. You're going to work with computers. And that's the thing. They're going to make sure that their children are at a level where they know that they can sustain themselves, and if something happened in the family, they can help sustain the family. Asian people are not, you don't see them in nursing homes a lot, not at all. You see maybe a few, but not many are in nursing homes because they take care of their people. That's their society. They take care of their people. We need to get back to that where we take care of grandma, grandpa, and that where grandma, grandpa taking care of our children. Okay. Let's go here back to some more literacy stuff. Okay, this is another thing that I found out, and I'm talking about this today, literacy, because it is important that our children learn how to read. It is important that we as a culture get back to where we need to be so we could progress. There's a movie out, and it may be out, it may be coming out. It's called Revisiting or Reliving Black Wall Street or something like that. I got to look that up, and that's something that I want to be able to get a hold of that video and read about it, because I believe that we don't have to just keep back, sit back saying, I remember when, or remember Wall Street, remember Black Wall Street, you remember Seneca Village, you remember these historically black towns, you remember Allensworth, they're right about an hour from where I live, historically black town. We don't have to keep saying, I remember when, remember when. Let's go ahead and push toward having that now. We could do the same thing that they did now. It's just that when we learn, that when we progress and we get on top, let's not forget our brothers and sisters who are willing, listen to me, those who are willing to take the step up, take it up another notch, that just don't want a handout but a way out. Now, this the statistics here show that the low rate of literacy in the United States directly costs the healthcare industry over $70 million a year. Now, when I'm talking about literacy, I'm not only just talking about black people, I'm talking about white people, I'm talking about Hispanic people, I'm talking about Asian people. I'm talking about people who cannot read or speak, don't read or write in their native language. Now, we know we don't write, read or write in our native language because they took it from us. But we had to be able to read and write in the language that they taught us in order to function, right? So if you ever, I used to work in insurance, medical insurance, I used to talk to clients about their bills and their claims and stuff like that. And this is so true. When you have people that don't know how to read, and just allow people to give them things, they waste a lot of money going back and forth to the doctor. If you ever look and go into an emergency room, which I do not like to go into, I went into a few weeks ago. My son got real ill, so I had no other choice but to take him. He had a couple of seizures. But the whole thing about it is when you are going into the emergency room, emergency rooms are for emergencies, but there's a whole lot of people there, and you can look at them. A lot of people that don't look like me, that don't look like you, that are sitting in that emergency room with a cough, with a sniffle, with a headache, because that's where they think that they need to go. And plus, a lot of these people are on Medi-Cal. They don't have private insurance, so guess who's paying for those fees? We are. We are paying for those through our hard-earned money that is taxed. So it costs the healthcare industry over $70 million every year to see these people, and it costs the healthcare. Why does it cost them that amount? Because then they're able to get all of the money that they could get if these people were on private insurance and understood that the emergency room is not the place to be. I'm going to share something with you, and that's what I had to share with people. When you go into the emergency room and you see a person and they say, oh, let's see, and you go back into the room and they put you in a room, you see a doctor, and he'll give you a shot or say, go see your doctor in the morning. That is not an emergency. If you go into the emergency room, you're bleeding from any orifices of your body, or you've been shot, or you've got a broke leg or broke arm, that's an emergency. But what we have in our United States now is called urgent care facilities. And most times if you go to an urgent care facility, you can get taken care of what you need to be taken care of. A lot of times your Medi-Cal will take care of that. Or if you don't have Medi-Cal, you have a private insurance, you have a $50 copay. Wouldn't you rather pay $50 for a copay than $1,500, $1,200 for an emergency room visit where you had to go see your doctor the next day anyway? So this is because people don't read, and if they could read, they choose not to read, And a lot of times it's because of illiteracy. They're taking the wrong medication at the wrong time. How many of our older grandparents who can't read and they can't remember whether they took the medication or they're overdosing on their medication or they're reading it wrong? I think maybe that was the smartest thing. Somebody came up with those little pill cases. You can have as many have them, like four or five of them hanging around their house, because every time you go to a health fair, they always, you know, have them in these little bags for you. So our literacy program, is very important to learn how to read, learn how to write, learn how to math. I'm going to be working with my students in my summer school program because I don't want to see them at this place. I don't want to see my little black boys, and those are mainly the ones that they're calling out. Hispanics, little brown and black boys, those are the ones that are struggling the most. I kid you not. And those are the ones that when I go in tomorrow, because my teacher who subs and is a floater to take these children out of the class and work with them individually, she won't be there tomorrow. So guess who's it? I'm it tomorrow morning when I get off from work. I got to go over there and work with some students. I love it, but I tell you what, that's something I do not want to see our students struggle with, reading, writing, arithmetic. I don't want to see them struggle with that. Somebody asked on Facebook the other day, how many of you actually use algebra on a daily basis? Everybody said, I do. I don't know, I do. What I'm trying to figure out, so what is algebra? Algebra is trying to find the missing piece, the missing number. You got to find out what that missing number is, okay? If I was making maybe mashed potatoes and it cost me so much milk and I only had like two-thirds cup of, I needed a cup of milk in my mashed, I'm making a big old bad thing of mashed potatoes. I need a cup of milk, but I only have somebody drink all the milk, just left me a couple of drops. I got to figure out how much more milk do I need to put into that cup, but on that measuring cup to make it a full cup. That's algebra. Cooks do it every day, okay? People do it every day. So these are the things that we need on a regular basis. And I went there to talk to us about homeschooling. I'm always going to talk to you about homeschool because, like I said, one of the things that we need to know is that we are our child's first teacher. We know what motivates them, and we know what gets them started. And if we don't, parents, it's time that you do. Because if you don't get your child started, if you don't motivate them and you don't know who they are or where they're at, somebody else is going to come along and do that for you, and it's not going to be a pretty picture. It really isn't. Let's look at a little bit of history right now. I'm going to go back to Hitler. If you ever go back to the movies or shows where, or videos or documentaries where you see Hitler with his marching team, who's marching in that team? Who's marching in that army? Young white males. Young German males. And most of the time, if you read, you'll see that he took those little young people who had no place to go, didn't have no vision for their life, probably were illiterate, couldn't function, on their way to death or jail, and he took them and he made an army out of them. We could look at that two ways. We could look at that as a negative way, and we could look at it as a positive way. The negative way is that our children are being turned into an army of slaves in the prison system. Because they have no future, they have no hope, they have no dream, they're not focused, they don't know how to read, they don't know how to write. So what? They're out there in the streets, they get in trouble, they get arrested, and what do? They go to juvenile hall. Share one thing with you. We had a juvenile boot camp in my community, and I would go over there and teach an entrepreneur class. They closed down that entrepreneur, juvenile boot camp. And I was talking to a gentleman one night, and I said, I can't believe that they just let him out. You know, what are they doing, checking in? He says, no, they did not let them out. They put them back in juvenile. Now, the boot camp was a place where the judges say, I'm going to allow you to go to this boot camp. You're not going to serve as much time, but you're going to have an opportunity to learn some. You're going to learn some discipline. And so when you get ready to go back out there, you're going to have some skills. Well, they figure that we're not going to release them. We're going to put them back in juvenile hall. Why? Because they had a few young people that were returning back to juvenile. They were constantly going back into getting in trouble. So those of those who would have done well leaving the system had no choice in the matter but to go back. So now they're in a system preparing them for a bigger system, which is prison. And if we read our 13th Amendment of the Constitution, you realize that involuntary slavery is still on board at the point of our prison system. So that's the bad thing about it, okay? The good thing about what it has done is that he taught them discipline. And we can do something like that with our children. And I'm not so much as, like, you know, beating them over the head, but we can get some strong black men to work together. I remember I used to tell this one brother who used to work at the prison after he retired. I said, man, you're so good with these young people. Can you just, it would be great if you could get a couple of brothers with you and get some of these young men and take them to the mountains and have them rough it out and teach them how to survive off the land. Just for a weekend, maybe 3 or 4 days during the summertime, take them up there, take them camping, talk to them, share with them, find out what their dreams and their hopes are. But his brother never really wanted to do it. No, I don't think so, no. I mean, just kind of just back and forth with it. But if we can get a group of our young men, our men, who have some good communicative skills and can know how to work with young people and take them, that would be great. I see I have a caller from the 585 area code. Caller, what is your name and you can talk to me? Hello, caller? Are you on the line still?
Hello?
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm sorry about that. Hi, I'm Beulah. I've called in before, and we're Facebook friends, and you've given me a lot of information. So I just wanted to call in tonight since I caught you while you were live on the air.
Thank you,
and
Beulah.
And I called from New York. I was listening to what you were saying about the reading skills. Another thing about it was reading comprehension. And a lot of people, maybe having the skills to read, might not be reading on a higher level, and they're just not comprehending what they're reading. It's just like how they say one thing in one ear and out the other. It's kind of like that with what they're reading, and they're not retaining it. And I think that's also a problem with how we have our education system set up. The kids don't want to read it, so they don't retain it. And then I think that kind of follows people throughout their adult life.
You know what, you're absolutely right, and I should have brought that up, but thank you for bringing that up, because reading comprehension is a big thing. And I found out that when we have students, because my students learn phonics, so my children could learn, they were reading and they were comprehending what they were reading, so they didn't have a problem reading novels and big books. But you have those students who could read, and they're just reading word after word after word because they've learned, they memorize what that word looks like. But at the end of the story, they cannot ever tell you what that word, what that story was all about, because it wasn't comprehending. They were just reading words. And comprehension is really great. And I'll tell you how comprehension works with if you're homeschooling your children, you get a paragraph. Have them read a paragraph at a time and go back with that paragraph and go, can you tell me who did what? Why did they do it? Where did they do it? When did they do it? Those are the questions you need to ask when they're reading, okay? So you can make sure that they're getting, they're understanding what they're reading. If they don't understand what they're reading, they won't know anything. Now, my comprehension, that there's different reasons why people can't comprehend. With me, when I was growing up going to a movie, I didn't really care too much going to a movie because I might have liked the movie, but kind of comprehend it. I could, in my mind, but being able to verbally express it to another person what that movie was about, don't ask me because I can't tell you. You need to go see it yourself. But as far as reading something, reading, asking those questions. That's what we need to make sure our children know, how to read, ask those questions. Parents, ask those questions so your child, you know that your child is comprehending. There are a whole lot of books that you can get even at the library. Check out books on comprehension. You could go to old bookstores, and they might have a section on reading comprehension books. But sometimes some bookstores, the real good old bookstores, they have everything separated. But you're absolutely right, Beulah. If we can read, they could be at the level reading those words, but if it comes to comprehension, they're not getting it. It's not going to help them at all. You're absolutely right. I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's a big component, just that reading it, the comprehension skills, you know, the analytical skills, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what's going to get the children to college level, and that's why a lot of kids, and it's not just our kids, it's all across the board, they're not at college level because they don't have the analytical skills, the critical thinking skills, and they don't have the ability to apply what they learned in real world or in the abstract. And that's why so many kids are in remedial classes at the college level.
Oh, yeah.
So it's something that I'm just at beginning homeschooling, which has given me a lot of good information on. But it's something that I'm constantly thinking about incorporating into homeschooling with my little ones, because that the people that can do that are going to be people who are successful in life, successful within their careers,
mm-hmm.
and who are able to manage other aspects of their lives. Those are the people who are going to really be able to get a budget, understand it, apply it to the abstract on paper, you know. So those are some
right.
things that we definitely have to think of raising our children. We can't just think, okay, they got their reading, math, their writing, their history. We have to think about, can they recall this? Can they understand why this was done at that point in time in history? Can they understand the implications? How does it affect us now? So I definitely agree with you that those comprehension skills and thinking a little bit further into it can affect someone's life overall, either for
mm-hmm.
better or for worse.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for listening. It's always good to hear from a listener. Thank you, Beulah. Okay?
Oh,
keep listening.
All right. I'll listen in next week.
Okay, great. I have a call on the line, area code 860. What's your name and how can I help you?
Hello, Paul Massey. How you doing?
I'm fine. Who is this?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. This is the Brother King from, you know, it's me, Paul King, man. I'm pretty, you know, can you hear me good?
How are you doing? I can hear you. What's your question today?
Well, you know, it's been a long time since I called the education system. But if we're talking about the comprehension of our babies, or depending on what age they are, wouldn't it be more now logic, since we're talking about Afrocentric and nation building, to give us a sense of an African language to integrate wherever the regular English language is? Because we all know this is a bastard language. And I'm sure can't really understand or, you know, pick upon this type of language. And they know this. That's why the first thing, anything, even when we bring them into any institution, the first thing they taught besides what we speak is this language. So I would mm-hmm. say probably changing language would probably better that, as like, you know, the second language to the first language. Let's say this is their mm-hmm. second language. Would probably greatly increase whatever little flaws they have. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because if this is a language gap, then we know that this is not our language. That right there, that we have to really change that first. Because if they do any studies, anybody that speaks our original language and they speak English as a second language, probably, and I don't know what the numbers are, I'm just saying, they're probably much greater. You know, said this is their second language, said their primary language. Because when you take some as a primary language, well, you know it's not your actual language. Because when we dialogue, we dialogue not only in this language, but it's for our own understanding, you know? We had to make it useful to understand it. That's what I'm trying to emphasize. You know, change
language. Yeah, well, you know what? Well, you know what? I think what happens is that when they have that language there, because we do speak this, what you call it, the bastard language, that's what we've been taught it is that what we need to do is, hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
What we need to do, I'm here. What we need to do is when we're teaching our children to read and write, and we can teach them that etymology of the word. When we learn the true meaning of the words and where the words were originated, our children have a better command of the language and understand what they're saying. Wow. You know what, King, you called in right when I was getting ready to shut down. I wish you were calling a little bit earlier. You got to learn to call in earlier. Pass my time on the radio.
I was, but you normally you go into your dissertation before you call in the 30 minutes of the show. I don't want to just call me this. You know what I mean? Because I know how you operate daily when you come on the show every time you get. So I don't really just press one. I'm like, I have to wait for the dissertation before I start pressing one. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, you know, next week I'm going to be talking about Common Core. The young lady was talking about the comprehension and critical thinking and the critical skills. So that's something I'm going to be talking about a lot next week. So you'll have more time to call in earlier. And so you'll know what we're going to be talking about. So everybody knows that I'm going to be having somebody come into the NAACP organization and speak to us about the Common Core and some of the issues that are going on with Common Core and what parents can do as far as Common Core is concerned. So we're going to be talking about that on next week, and I want to thank you, King, for calling.
Can I leave one suggestion before you go off? One suggestion. I'm going to have to inbox it better so if you don't really take it. Look into the Akaban Institute if you're not familiar. If not, inbox the address and have you look through the institute just for your take on it.
Yeah. Go ahead and inbox that to me so I can take a look at it. That would be great if you can inbox it to me, okay?
And for all people must understand, we train our children not just to have a good job. We train them to be nation builders. That's the whole premise. Yeah, stop saying we want them just to get through college. No, we want to be nation builders. Because to get out of this rubble, we have to be in a nation-building mindset. That is all. Good night, Paula.
Okay. Well, you have a good evening. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the Education of the Miseducated System. This is Paula Massey. And I hope you had a wonderful evening. And I'll see you on next Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time. We're going to be talking about Paula Tour.
Just move on. Dynasty Radio 1382.